This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The San Antonio Public Library and the San Antonio Memorial Holocaust Museum are teaming up in January to educate the public on the lasting and localized impact of the Holocaust. There are a number of events at neighborhood libraries that explore the experience of Holocaust survivors.
Jacob was one of seven boys in a religious Jewish family. They lived in a town 50 miles west of Warsaw called Gaben, where Jacob's father worked as a cap maker. Gaben had one of Poland's oldest synagogues, built of wood in 1710. Like most of Gaben's Jews, Jacob's family lived close to the synagogue. The family of nine occupied a one-room apartment on the top floor of a three-story building. On September 1, 1939, just a few months before he turned 10, the Germans started a war with Poland. After the Germans reached his town, they doused the synagogue and surrounding homes with gasoline and set them on fire. All the Jewish men were rounded up in the marketplace and held there while the synagogue and homes burned to the ground. Jacob's house had also been doused with gasoline, but the fire didn't reach it. At age 12, Jacob was put in a group of men to be sent to labor camps. More than a year later, they were shipped to Auschwitz. The day after they arrived, his brother Chaim and he were lined up with kids and old people. He asked the prisoner what was going to happen to them. The prisoner pointed to the chimneys. "Tomorrow the smoke will be from you." He said, "If they could get a number tattooed on our arms, we would be put to work instead of being killed." The boys sneaked to the latrine, then escaped through a back door and lined up with the men getting tattoos. After 17 months in Auschwitz, Jacob was forced to march to camp in Germany. Liberated in April 1945 near Austria, he immigrated to the United States at the age of 16.
2019 Holocaust Remembrance in San Antonio will focus on the spiritual, armed, intellectual, defensive, and political forms of resistance under the Nazi regime. But while the Holocaust maybe history, there are many lessons that apply to what's happening in the world today. Last month, a sign appeared at the San Antonio Holocaust Memorial Museum calling it fake news and MAGA, Make America Great Again. What is happening in the world today? How can we as a community stand up to the rising hate? And is that enough? You can call in with your questions and comments as we talk about the efforts between the San Antonio Public Library and the San Antonio Memorial Holocaust Museum and what's happening in the world today. The theme of their impact for 2019 is resist. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And you can email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined this afternoon with Varda Ratner. She's a second-generation Holocaust survivor. Ellen Oler Videz is the director of the Holocaust Memorial Museum of San Antonio. Haley Holmes is with us. She's the program's manager for the San Antonio Public Library. And again, the number to call in for you to join our conversation, and we do want you to join our conversation, 210-614-8980. Ellen, as the director of the Holocaust Museum here in San Antonio, I'm interested in finding out more about the sign. What happened with that sign? I mean, it was actually a pretty big sign. It wasn't just like a little tiny thing that someone, like a piece of cardboard. It seemed like it was pretty massive.
It was an oversized yard sign that, as you mentioned, said fake news at MAGA. And it was placed upon the grounds of the museum and the campus early in the morning. It was removed quite early, but it was exposed by someone who saw it and shared it on social media and then released in a press, a media release, a condemnation of the act. So we investigated, as we would anything that was placed at the campus, and removed the sign and really just thought, we're in an important line of work. We thought about how we would take that information and perhaps talk about it in our groups and our docent training, just again to reinforce the message that this education and this outreach is really important. But that social media that went out invited a lot of community engagement. And what does it mean? What is the juxtaposition of a sign that says fake news against a Holocaust History Museum sign? And many people felt that it was suggestive of a denier, someone who would say that this history did not occur. Some people who were investigating, however, did not see a connection between fake news and that juxtaposition. And once again, it just reinforced our belief and our dedication to teaching this history.
The social media aspect of it, it became a viral story. It was in all the major newspapers around the world that this happened in San Antonio. Was there any sort of echo effects? Were there other people that bombarded you with social media accusations and or phone calls or any other follow-up hate?
Most all of the responses were of support and concern and offers of assistance. There were some connections to hate groups that then posted on some of the social media outlets that then shared that particular image. But what was really startling was at the end of that week, we'd received a bouquet of flowers that was attached in the note. I saw the recent news about the hateful sign that was placed on your property. I visited your museum when I was in school, and I want you to know that you have friends in the community. And that really, to me, represents San Antonio. And I think that through the Holocaust Museum and our educational outreach, we are looking at people. We're teaching the behaviors of people and the actions of people, particularly in this year of resistance, study of resistance, the beautiful humanity that existed in the resistance movements. But to me, this letter was reflective of the San Antonio that we all love and the San Antonio that I think continues to benefit from the outreach of the museum and other humanitarian programs that build community and teach history.
I think that was one reason why it was such a startling thing was that it was in San Antonio, not because this is our home, but because we think of ourselves in different terms. We want to be a city of compassion and welcoming people, embracing people, and this was just did not ring like this is our community.
It did shake a lot of people.
So there was is a ongoing police investigation. Anything from there?
There's no indication of who may have placed that sign, and there's really nothing to the investigation right now.
Did you increase security afterwards?
We did. But again, what we feel that is the biggest takeaway is again a dedication to teaching the history.
And this comes, I mean, it was just in October that there was the massacre at the Tree of Life in Pittsburgh. This is becoming real. This is, and it's on your doorstep. Did you ever think this could happen?
No, we wouldn't have anticipated this. But there's great concern, the rise of hateful acts all across America. Concerns anyone that is teaching and grooming young people for a better world, a brighter world. So, there's a lot to be concerned about.
We're talking about Holocaust remembrance. Do you have a question or a comment or a story to tell us about the Holocaust? What can we learn from the tragedy? How can we resist the hate that is rising in our country today? Where is it coming from? Can we come together as a community and form some sort of barrier to keep it from getting any further? Call in with your questions, comments, suggestions, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Holocaust remembrance. We have a month of events that are happening as the San Antonio Holocaust Memorial Museum teams up with the San Antonio Public Library for events that will be happening at the main library and also at neighborhood libraries across San Antonio. We're going to play another clip from the Holocaust Museum, and this is a reminder that it wasn't just people, Jewish people who were persecuted and exterminated by the Nazis. They also targeted other individuals, including homosexuals. So this clip does have a little bit of adult language in it, but I think it's important, so we're going to air it.
As a young boy growing up in Berlin, Harry developed a love for the theater. At 15, he began acting in minor roles at a theater at the Nollendorfplatz. During this time, he was also an apprentice to a hairdresser, but he disliked the work. Most of his time was spent with other actors, both at the theater and in nightclubs where the homosexual community in Berlin gathered. When the Nazis came to power, they closed these bars. Some homosexuals, especially those who were Jewish, were killed by Nazi hooligans. Harry's friend Susie, a drag queen, was stabbed to death. In 1936, Harry was arrested under the Nazi-revised, notorious paragraph 175 of the German Criminal Code, which outlawed homosexuality. He was imprisoned in a camp in southern Germany, where he worked in the marshes 12 hours a day, every day. He was released after 15 months. In 1943, Harry was turned into the Nazis by two boys who had been pressured by the Gestapo to denounce homosexuals. Again, he was sentenced under paragraph 175. This time, he was released after only 8 months because friends in the theater intervened on his behalf. Harry was drafted into the army, but as he stated, "Wherever I went, people knew of my 175 conviction and called me a dirty faggot." He could not handle the ridicule and deserted twice. Finally, as punishment, Harry was sent to a special combat unit in which almost everyone in it was killed. However, in the end, he somehow survived. Following the war, Harry started his own small theater and continued living his life as he always had.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about Holocaust remembrance. That's a clip from the San Antonio Holocaust Memorial Museum. Also with us this afternoon is Varda Ratner. She's a second-generation Holocaust survivor. And so these things that we talk about, they're not actually that far from you. You feel a closeness to them. They're your parents. How does that feel?
It feels very scary. Well, like Ellen said, I try to stay positive and believe most people aren't like that. But most people, I don't think, were like that in Germany at first. It was a very civilized, highly cultured society, and yet look what ended up happening there. My parents always said to me, "Don't you ever think this couldn't happen here in the United States." So when I see the rise of anti-Semitism and that sign with the Holocaust denial sign, which I believe it was, isn't the only act of anti-Semitism. At my synagogue and another synagogue in town just 2 to 3 years ago, we had anti-Semitic graffiti and swastikas plastered on those properties. So right here in San Antonio. And then, of course, there's the shooting in Pittsburgh, so it's very scary.
And it's also with other communities. The local mosques are also targeted frequently.
It's horrible. No group should be treated that way. We're all human beings, and we all need to be treated and respected as human beings, even if we have different beliefs, different color skin, different sexual orientation, whatever it is. We're all human beings.
The Nazis also targeted people who had birth defects, as they called it at the time, anyone who was disabled, mm-hmm. anyone who was considered an other was a target.
Yes, people with mental health issues as well. So it's so hard to understand.
Yeah. Second generation Holocaust survivor, what do you feel like your responsibility is for being one?
My responsibility is to educate people on what happened, because my father never wanted to do it, but my mother spoke on behalf of the museum here in San Antonio, and so after she passed away, I took on that responsibility, and I tell my parents' stories to school groups and to anyone who wants to hear it, and I tell it at the museum, and I also do docent tours of the museum pretty often, and I volunteer on committees at the museum. I give as much time as I can to this cause.
I'm going to ask you to tell that story in just a second. I'm going to get a caller on the air. The number is 210-614-8980. Oh, we just lost the caller. But the producer messaged that the caller was asking, why does this happen? Why does this hate surface? Why does it get so violent? Why can't we all just get along? And I don't know, is that something that y'all have explored or you understand? Is there some sort of psychological, sociological explanation for how do these things happen? Ellen, since you're the director of the Holocaust Museum.
When we teach the history, we look at how do political, economic, and social conditions give rise to fear? And then how do institutions and leaders take that fear and create opportunity to dehumanize others, blame others, isolate others, marginalize, discriminate. We try very hard to kind of investigate what are some of the factors that might exist that give rise to these behaviors. It's hard to explain, but looking in the rearview mirror at this history, there's an opportunity to look at the roles of individuals and governments and institutions. And then by using that as an example of what has happened, what we know has happened, we can look at patterns. And then as individuals who care about community and others, we forge relationship, we create community, we dispel notions that are stereotypical, that are hateful, that are violent in nature, and we stand together against those forces.
So there is a blueprint or a roadmap that certain individuals can use in order to exploit certain biases that a society might have in order to gain power at the cost of other individuals. They know how this has happened before. They know how to do it, and so we can recognize it in the early stages, but still, there this denying happens that this can't happen here. There's no way. It's bad now, but it'll never get as bad as it was in Nazi Germany. And so do you think that your role is to let people know where are we on that roadmap, and we're closer to disaster and tragedy and Holocaust than we might want to admit?
There are scholars that have examined the stages of genocide, and they have created Genocide Watch around the globe. And for the first time, America is on that list because of some of the tendencies toward rhetoric that is hurtful and hateful and causes people harm. And it used to be that if you were running for any type of an office, if you were to embrace any of the language of hateful individuals, then you were not electable. But some of the language is cleansed in such a way that I don't know that people really understand until it's let loose that hate-filled discourse, hate-filled rhetoric exists. And that can be perpetuated. Hate is an easy thing to foster. And it is very easy to foster.
Attacking our institutions, things like fake news, discrediting the media, which would normally try to police this type of hate speech.
And it was an early tactic in the Nazi regime to discredit press and then to control that message. So, again, just looking back at a history, you can find sort of a way to connect anything you like that concerns you about the role of government and institutions. The blueprint is the Nazi regime. So by studying it, we have a chance to see, are we creating conditions that give rise to behaviors that once existed that we said, never again do we want to see?
Let's go to the phones with Jessica, 210-614-8980. And Jessica, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, I guess I just had a question.
Okay.
There's a, obviously children are getting taught some of this hate right now, especially with parents and all of these little movements. What's a way that maybe, I don't know if we could put this in school or, if we teach, some people teach their children, what's a way for them to unlearn this? Is there a way to unlearn this, or are we doomed of another generation full of hate?
Okay. So thank you for the call, Jessica. Let's hear from Varda Ratner. She's a second-generation Holocaust survivor.
We really do believe it can be unlearned. When I see students' faces when I'm giving tours at the museum, when they see the horrors that took place, that started out where people started out just being part of society and then ended up being starved to death or gassed to death or shot to death and thrown into a pit, and I see their reactions.
Or beaten to death by hooligans.
I mean, the list could go on and on, and we could be here all day talking about all the cruel ways they hurt people and killed people. The look on their faces, it's a real eye-opener to them to learn about this. And, you know, some states are actually, several states have are now mandating Holocaust education, more in-depth Holocaust education in the public schools. And I'm actually involved with a small group of people who have come together trying to get that kind of mandate here in Texas. So we would love to see more Holocaust education in the public schools.
The San Antonio Public Library is taking a leadership role in trying to educate our youth in the realities of this. And we're joined by Haley Holmes. She's a programs manager for the San Antonio Public Library.
This is the seventh year that we've partnered with the Holocaust Museum for the Holocaust Learn and Remember programming series. And we have close to 30 events over the next month and a variety of things. And people often ask, well, how does the library fit into education? It's clear that the library offers passive education through books and information, but we also are focused on experiences and bring people together to discuss issues like this, because when they come together as a community, then they start making connections with each other. And it's harder to hate someone who's right next to you or in front of you once you've gotten to know them. This series does focus primarily for adults and teens, but this time around, we are adding a story time to have children come and talk about accepting everyone.
I want to hear more about that in just a moment. But first, I want to get Senator Menendez. He's called into the line. Senator Jose Menendez, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Dave.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I just want to say, one, thank you to you and to the program and everybody that's on the panel today. Eye-opening. I know. I sometimes think that this has to be such isolated, just ignorance and hatred and a few people. But to hear that some states, I want to know more about the legislation that that states have introduced for Holocaust education. And I want to know if Texas has anything going? If not, this is timeliness. We just started legislative session, and if other states have some model legislation, maybe we can introduce something.
And do you want to address that, Varda?
Sure. There are several states that have the legislation, including New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania doesn't mandate it, but they highly recommend it. Michigan. There are a few others I can't remember off the top of my head. The most recent one, I believe, is Kentucky. And so there are ones we can model after. Right now, my group has been reaching out to different it's funny that you called because I was getting ready to call and make an appointment with you. So maybe this is, there's a Jewish expression called beshert, meant to be. But anyway, so we are looking into trying to get this into legislation this year.
And Senator Menendez, you think that the other senators, lawmakers, would welcome something like this?
You know, it's one of those things, Dave, where, like, when I did the cyberbullying bill at first, some people tried to tell me that it was just a San Antonio problem, that it was isolated, that parents should take care of it at home. And I just kept pushing. And I think that many of my colleagues will be very open to this idea. But whether or not I get, right off the bat, a universal support is not as important to me as saying other states have done this. This is the time where we need to do this because there's so much hatred out there, and we're having examples of people who are just forgetting the very real history, and they're trying to deny it. So I'd like to introduce a legislation that says, here's reality. Here's what happened, and we need to accept everyone, and because if you don't, this is what could happen.
Senator Jose Menendez, thank you so much. San Antonio Democrat representing the area in Austin during the legislative session. We're going to take a break and we'll be back. We'll be continuing our conversation about Holocaust remembrance here on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.
Joseph was born in Bitterfeld, Germany, to gypsy parents. For reasons unknown, he was raised in an orphanage for the first 1.5 years of his life. At the time of Joseph's birth, some 26,000 gypsies, members of either the Sinti or Roma tribes, lived in Germany. Though most were German citizens, they were often discriminated against by other Germans and subjected to harassment. When Joseph was 12, he was taken from his classroom by two strangers who said he had appendicitis and needed immediate surgery. He protested, but he was beaten and forcibly taken into surgery, where he was sterilized. a procedure legalized by a Nazi law allowing the forced sterilization of asocials, a category that included gypsies. After his recovery, Joseph was to be deported to the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp, but his foster father managed to have him smuggled from the hospital and hidden. Joseph spent the last 5 months of the war hiding in a garden shed. He survived.
We're talking about Holocaust remembrance on this Source Today. The San Antonio Public Library has combined forces with the San Antonio Memorial Museum of the Holocaust to educate the community about the dangers of hatred, prejudice, and apathy. The number to call in is 210-614-8980 as we explore the resistance of the Holocaust and what it can tell us today about what's happening around us. Let's go to Rob on the line. And Rob, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. I retired from the military. First of all, I want to say thank you so much for bringing this topic to light. I'm a Jewish man and I'm a gay Jewish man. And there's been a lot of conflict in this city over the past 10 years about many different ideas. When I saw the graffiti on the signs, and then just this past October that read about that sign that was in front of the synagogue, I was sickened. I felt almost as if I had been backstabbed by the community, because the reason I decided to stay in San Antonio is because of the devotion they have to family, the devotion they have to love. There's a camaraderie here in this town that makes it so pleasant, regardless of how big it gets. My grandmother told me before she passed, at 103 years old, that she wouldn't be surprised if another Holocaust happened in our country. I was very, very much a younger person, so I laughed it off. But at my age now, I'm 51, I can tell you that the lack of education, follow the leader, so to speak. They hear hate, so they repeat hate. It's frightening. It really is. I've been to the museum here. My grandmother came to the museum here when I first moved to San Antonio, and the reason she told me that she thought it would be safe here is because of the incredible sense of community that was here. So that's all I really know, is that that's the only reason I stayed. And I read all this, and I just hope that the education that this young lady is going to help distribute will change people's minds, because underneath our skin we all have red blood, and that's how I was raised.
Rob, thank you so much for the call. As you talked about how it personally impacted him, and that's chilling to me to just know that when someone can throw up a sign, one individual does not make the community, but one individual can do something horrible, and it's how we respond to it is what's going to define the community. So if we all come together and say, that's not us, this is not going to be what San Antonio stands for, we're going to be something else, then that's what will be how we remember what happened here. But, so Varda, can you, relate though to Rob's story about like, oh my, this is like a wake up call almost, like it's time to really get serious.
Yes, this has been a wake up call. Unfortunately, I've had other wake up calls in my lifetime with experiencing anti-Semitism. I grew up, from the moment I understood language as a toddler, my father was telling me everybody hates us because we're Jewish, which I don't believe, and I didn't believe it then, and I was like, I don't know what, my father's crazy kind of thing. And then, as I grew older, I heard he was a Holocaust survivor, but I still believed it could never happen here. I would have discussions with my parents, it could never happen here, and they kept telling me it could. And then one day I was at the bus stop, and we were standing in front of these friends' garage, and on rainy days we'd go into the garage. And these were kids I grew up with in the neighborhood, and we were friends. And that rainy day I walked into the garage, and they said, "Get out." And I said, "Why?" And they said, "Because you're Jewish. Get out, you kike." And which is a derogatory word about Jews. And I remember just walking out to the end of the driveway and standing there in the rain with my back to them, feeling like they were throwing daggers, because they kept badgering me with horrible things. And I kept feeling like knives were stabbing me in the back. And all I could think of was, oh my God, my parents were right. And that stayed with me. It still stays with me to some extent. But for many years, I was afraid to tell anyone I was Jewish. I tried to hide it. And that didn't happen here in San Antonio. I grew up in Massachusetts. But
it could have happened anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. And so anyway, I feel like I've grown out of that, and now I feel proud to be Jewish, and I feel proud to speak out about the Holocaust and work hard at Holocaust education.
And Rob commented on, he was glad that you were doing the work and working with children and teaching them. And can you tell us more about the workshops that you're doing with kids at the San Antonio Public Library?
So this year we wanted to try to add something for children, and we have a story time that's going to be happening on this Saturday at 2 o'clock at the Central Library called Celebrating Our Differences Story Time. And the children's librarian will be focusing on tolerance and refugees in a way that children can understand. But it's also important for their parents, as a previous caller said, to change their way of thinking so that they can help their children in accepting everyone. We're also on Monday at 7 p.m. at the Jewish Community Center Holzman Auditorium hosting Brundabar, which is going to be done by the University of Texas at San Antonio Opera on the Run in coordination with some local elementary school children. And they'll be performing the opera that was famously performed by children in a concentration camp. So that's another event that's family friendly and a good one to bring children to.
That ought to be moving. Incredible. Let's get another caller, Barry. And Barry, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. I'm bringing back some, quote, ancient history. Back in the 1960s, when I was raised in New York, we did have a fair amount of anti-Semitism. And we put together an organization called the JDL, or the Jewish Defense League, where we were getting ready to go at it, physically go at it, with people that were doing graffiti on synagogues and attacking older people in Brooklyn and so on and so forth. When that stopped, when we finally said, okay, everything is going smooth, my wish was we'd never have to hear it again. But with our dear president and his base group of American white supremacists, I'm beginning to believe that that organization might have to be resurrected.
With the Holocaust Museum, Memorial Museum that we have in San Antonio, Ellen Oler-Valdez, do y'all talk about that type of history, about how the resistance was there in World War II and then ongoing?
Yes, we examine the various ways in which people resisted the regime by assisting those that were targets, by examining those who were rescuers who at their own peril hid children or removed children covertly from ghettos. We examine those that were diplomatically engaged and could utilize their power through government to offer refuge and safety to those that they could provide that particular assistance to. It really, resistance is the bright and shiny spot in a very dark history. And so being able to illuminate that gives us an opportunity to see the best of human beings as models for all of us. It's hard to imagine what people would do in situations like that. And it's those conditions were truly unbearable. But by studying those individuals that did create coalitions and partnerships and resistance, we are given another roadmap for ways in which we could engage one another if we need to face dangerous or perilous conditions.
Resistance is the theme for the 2019 Holocaust Remembrance in San Antonio. Why did you pick the resistance?
We were at a workshop last summer in Houston, and we learned about a group of individuals. They were historians, and they were trapped in the Warsaw Ghetto. They were receiving information from the outside that there wasn't really a return, that people were being murdered, gassed, killed in various ways. And they understood that they might never leave the ghetto alive, nor would the culture exist after this war. So in these conditions...
So they were facing an existential threat to the entire Jewish culture, race, everything.
Correct. So in this relatively powerless situation, this historian, Emanuel Ringelblum, created an archive. He created a secret society that began to collect and archive diary entries, documents, preparing a history for a culture that was probably not going to live. And it inspired us thinking about cultural resistance, really, just who's going to tell our story if we're not around to tell it. And it became an inspiration for thinking more and more about how did resistance show up in this history.
Resistance, and there's resistance now as we're seeing the signs that there could be more hate and more acts of violence against the vulnerable here in our own society today. We'll be talking about that when we come back from the break. If you've got a question or a comment, please call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this.
Osi was the youngest of six children, born to Roman Catholic gypsies who traveled in a family wagon. Their caravan spent winters in Vienna, Austria's capital, and summers in the Austrian countryside. The Stoichkas belonged to a tribe of gypsies who made their living as itinerant horse traders. Osi's ancestors had lived in Austria for more than 200 years. Osi was 2 years old when Germany annexed Austria in March 1938. The Stoichka family wagon was parked for the winter in a Vienna campground when the Germans marched in. They ordered the gypsies to stay put. Osi's family had to convert their wagon into a wooden house and had to adjust to staying in one place. Gypsies were forced to register as members of a different race. When Osi was five, the Germans took away his father. Next, they took his sister, Kathy. Finally, Osi and the rest of his family were deported to a Nazi camp in Birkenau for gypsies. There was very little to eat, mostly turnips. Little Osi fell ill with typhus and was taken to the barracks for sick prisoners. The infirmary was often referred to by prisoners as the antechamber of the crematoria. Osi was given no medical treatment in the infirmary and died of typhus and malnutrition. He was just 7 years old.
We're talking about Holocaust remembrance today on The Source. The San Antonio Memorial Holocaust Museum is working with the San Antonio Public Library to present a number of events. Excuse me. And can you tell us more about that, Haley?
Yes, like I said before, we have close to 30 events happening over the next month, and those events include an exhibit at the Central Library called Besa, a Code of Honor, Muslim Albanians Who Rescued Jews During the Holocaust. That'll be up through the month of January. In addition, we have lectures by local college professors and museum staff throughout the city, musical performances, film screenings, and book discussions.
And let's go to the caller. This is Robin. And Robin, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you so much for the show that you're providing and for the services that are being provided regarding the Holocaust. I'll make this brief. I live in San Antonio. My grandmother, at five, watched her grandmother get beheaded. And it was not, she wasn't Jewish. This was only a few years after the Holocaust, during the Hellenization of Greece, when they made everyone who wasn't Greek either become Greek, change their names, kill people that wouldn't cooperate. You were not allowed to speak your native. We were Macedonian. And so we are forgetting only a few years later, and then fast forward to when the Bosnian Serbs were killing, ethnically cleansing the Albanians out off the face of the earth. We're forgetting. And we continue to not remember of the atrocities, and we repeatedly do this again and again and again. And so my comment is, I think if you have individuals that experienced it or that have family members, grandparents or great aunts or uncles, I think that's when you're really going to make an impact, because people see someone who knows someone who's experienced it. Reading about it is one thing, but seeing somebody talk to you about what they know or what they have heard from a loved one is really what's going to impact them. That's just my opinion.
Well, thank you for your call, Robin. So let me go back to Varda Ratner, second-generation Holocaust survivor. And can you tell us what you found out growing up? What did your parents tell you about their experience?
My mother at first didn't tell me anything. That's common in many survivors. They don't want to talk about it. But my father, he really just talked a lot about the evil of the Nazis. And he told us about how he got away. He grew up in Poland. His immediate family managed to go to Palestine. I still don't know the details of how they managed to do that, but it was before the Nazis invaded, and that was part of why. He couldn't get his grandmother to leave. She refused to leave. She said this would pass, that Germany wasn't going to attack Poland. There was that. You know, it's really not that bad. So that's one thing I am always sensitive to, is when we say, oh, well, this isn't that bad. It's just a couple of people that are doing this. We need to be careful and really watch the tides that are coming. He escaped from Poland to Austria, but then Austria got way before the Nazis invaded Poland. But of course, Austria got annexed, so he left there. He went to Paris and he fought in the resistance, in the French resistance against the Nazis, but they failed, so he escaped to Switzerland and wrote out the war there. My mother finally started talking about it in when I was in my 40s, and so that's about 20 years ago. But her story, she was one of the lucky ones. My parents were the lucky ones. They were not in camps. They never got sent to a camp. They were sent. My mother was in a ghetto. She was taken from the ghetto many times to be taken to a labor camp, but escaped a couple of times. She ended up getting papers of Swiss protection. We don't hear that much about the diplomatic efforts of resistance by the Swiss. We hear about it with the Swedish government, but the Switzerland always also did it, and Karl Lutz was the diplomatic resistor who did that, and they got papers that protected her. But then the Nazis ended up disrespecting those papers in the end, and she was taken on a death march. She escaped again. So my mother was a big resistor, and she was hidden by another resistor, a woman named Anush Orosz, who was a Gentile in Hungary, and she let my mother and my grandmother hide in her apartment for the duration of the war.
Syria, Congo, Sudan, Yemen, Central America, these are places in the world where they say genocide is now happening. With the Holocaust Museum here in San Antonio, Ellen, y'all also pay attention to what's happening all around the world.
Yes, the Rohingya Muslims. Yes, we have activities that we work after our students visit the museum and have an opportunity to explore the history, they're given an opportunity to make connections to the world, looking at other examples of discrimination and of marginalization, opportunities to understand the expression of this kind of hatefulness in other cultures so that they understand that they're still on watch. This is less than 75 years since the liberation of Auschwitz, and yet there's evidence aplenty to suggest that this continues around the world, and we have to be watchful.
So we talked about this blueprint or roadmap that someone can use, a leader can use, in order to create another type of dictatorship or Holocaust type of situation here or anywhere around the world. And one thing that happened with the Nazis is a fake emergency and a declaration of emergency powers, which the chancellor was able to use in order to suddenly throw away the Constitution and any sort of checks and balances so that they could do many horrible things. And that's when it became too late for some individuals to escape the horror. That's when it got all too real and undeniable. And so is that part on that roadmap, a fake emergency declaration of emergency powers?
Yeah. Yes, it is. And we reiterate the importance of protecting and caring for our democracy.
The rule of law.
Yes, the rule of law. Paying attention, being mindful, understanding that democracies are fragile and they require our constant vigilance and our participation in civic engagement, not just in our own communities, but in communities of others, however you decide others. Everyone really needs to be part of the human experience. And as such, we have to be mindful of what's happening in communities, even if they're not the ones that we grew up in. We have to pay attention.
Frequently, we have coded messages in the media as we talk about politics and we attack individuals, try to discredit them. People will hear the name George Soros thrown out all the time as a way to try to discredit someone. And what do they mean when they keep throwing around the word George Soros? Varda?
Well, George Soros was a Holocaust survivor himself from Hungary, where my mother was from, and that's so hurtful. But it's scapegoating. Just like the Jews were scapegoated in Nazi Europe, they were blamed for everything. He's now being blamed for everything. And he's so wealthy. He was a self-made man. He earned his wealth, and after going through such horrors, But he's targeted now because he's seen as the stereotypical rich Jew with too much power. And that's where the dangers of stereotyping come out. So, and we were talking about the warning signs, and it's the warning signs are, like you said, trying to control the media or discredit the media. That was something that Hitler did once he took emergency powers. He totally became a dictator. He took over the media. He took over public education. He controlled everything that people could learn. He had a commander of propaganda, chief of propaganda, who put out the message. And I really feel like this whole thing with George Soros is propaganda.
And with the Holocaust Memorial Museum in San Antonio, we talk about resistance and trying to stand up against the hate, participating in these events that are happening, showing up is part of the resistance.
Absolutely. Showing up, being mindful, meet your neighbors, expose your children to a variety of cultures and individuals. I think the library is an extraordinary place, and I think that is an opportunity for people who care to engage in literature and opportunities to have these story times and to experience whoever shows up.
Show up at the MLK March.
Yes.
Show up for all the Dream Week events.
Absolutely.
Show up and stand up against hate. Stand up against apathy and embrace your neighbors. Stand up for community and acceptance, and that we will be together for peace. I want to thank all of our guests this afternoon, Varda Ratner, second-generation Holocaust survivor, Ellen Oler Valdez. She is the director of the Holocaust Memorial Museum in San Antonio. Haley Holmes, programs manager for the San Antonio Public Library. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.